Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. It is the 25th of February, 14 minutes past the hour. And let us welcome our panel. We certainly welcome you. You can write to us, panel at wamc.org, panel at wamc.org. I'll give you rules later, but there are some. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce everybody. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning. Alan, how are you?
Well, good morning. It's post-colonoscopy day, and I'm a very happy man.
Oh, post-colonoscopy. Oh, post-colonoscopy day. How are you walking?
Very careful.
Excellent. Okay, good. Well, congratulations. Glad that got it all out of you, as it were. Mike Spain.
Glad you said that.
How do you follow that up, Mike?
Yeah. Mike Spain, how's your colon?
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Former Times Union Associate Editor and very good sport, and we thank you very much. J.P. Miller joins us from the Empire Report. Good morning, J.P.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Thank you very much. And, oh, my goodness, look at this. I have not been with Jen since August, I think.
It has been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a long time. You were out traveling the world, and I was traveling stairs not very well, and so here we are. Very nice to see you. Jen Smith of the Berkshire Eagle, a great pleasure to have you back.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be reunited.
Well, wonderful. And you'll be back on Mondays from March, and we're very excited to have you back in the fold. So thank you very much. Rosemary Armeo is sitting right next to me. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good
How
morning.
Are you?
Very good.
Always good to see you. She
no
is
medical procedures.
No, not yet. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor, and a pleasure always to have this group before us. So let us get started. The Harvey Weinstein verdict is in. This is what we know. He is found guilty of sex crimes. There were two felonies that he was convicted on yesterday out of seven. Manhattan jury convicted Mr. Weinstein of rape and criminal sexual act, but acquitted him on three other counts, including the two most serious charges against him being a sexual predator. Mr. Weinstein sat motionless as the verdict was read. "But I'm innocent," he said three times to his lawyers, appearing stunned a few minutes later when he was handcuffed and two court officers led him off to jail to await sentencing. He was taken first to Bellevue Medical Center by ambulance after complaining of chest pains and showing signs of high blood pressure, according to his representatives. Now, meanwhile, you will remember that while we have these two cases, he is also facing charges in the state of California. Mm-hmm. So it is not over for Mr. Weinstein. He is going to be held at Rikers until his sentencing, which I believe is next month. Ugh. And then they will figure out at what point he will travel, because he has to travel to California to face those charges. All right. It was 5 days of deliberation, 7 men, 5 women. There was a bit of a kerfuffle on Friday when the jury came out and said that two of the charges they had decided on and they were unable to reach a verdict on the others. The judge said, take more time. They did. And we got the verdict that we got. Who would like to start? Rosemary? Jo-Jan?
Okay, sure, I'll start. I think that it was a mixed bag. I think the online magazine Slate said that. It's just mixed results. Mm-hmm. First, and the best thing is that the guilty verdict means that we're changing women. By we, I mean women are changing the idea that rape is to only be responded to with screams of horror and fighting back and struggle. There's a recognition in the Weinstein case that women react to rape in different ways, and these women might have tried to make it seem normal to continue relationships with Weinstein, and they still called it rape. So those guilty verdicts are really important. They did not believe one of the women whose testimony was crucial that they believed to find him guilty of being
considered one of the most compelling.
Exactly. However, I that's bad in a way, except that, you know, the sentence there is life, and it ought to be extraordinary evidence before you take away a man's entire freedom forever. Mm-hmm. So I'm not unhappy that happened. I find the defense attorney who worked for Weinstein to be really interesting. She fought against, I think, gender interests. She tried to paint women in that old way that if you're raped, you yell and scream, you're never nice to the guy again. And that's so old-fashioned and hurtful. And yet, I applaud her because she was defending someone who is really indefensible, I think. Mm-hmm. And she did what the American system requires, which is to put on an active defense. And she sowed enough doubt that she got him out of the worst charges. I'm not jealous. I'm not upset that he didn't get the top sentence because he still has more to face. And he's gone away, it looks like.
Do you think that it will make it easier in any way, shape, or form for women to come, given what those women went up against by the prosecution?
Yeah, it was
horrible. And how they were questioned, of women who will come forward to do just what you said, to try to turn that narrative away from the yelling
from
and
the
screaming.
I want to hear what Jen has to say about this, but my reaction is women need to toughen up. We need to speak out. We need to stand up for each other. And I think that happened. Weinstein was the first time I really, and Cosby too, but when women really began supporting one another in spite of and in the face of continued harassment like they faced in this trial.
Well, and I think that's the part of the challenge is that what it took to achieve this moment of recognition of literally an ages-old issue. And I think, you know, it's been said again, I think Rose McGowan, when she came out with her statement yesterday, really shed light on this. And the founder of the Me Too movement, which is a Black woman, who was trying to raise issues that there's inequity in getting justice for women of color in rape and sexual assault issues, too. So, yes, it's without a doubt a victory in regards to seeing momentum, but it's long overdue momentum.
Yep.
And it does bring some trepidation to the table, too. What do I do if I'm a victim or a survivor who doesn't have high-powered attorneys, who doesn't have the media clamoring after my case, who doesn't have the funds to
bring a
endure a trial? And these are things that will have to be addressed, and that's where the advocacy really stands. And I think, again, you know, Harvey Weinstein, what will happen? Will he make it to L.A.? Will he make it to California? And what will the take be on there? And I think, you know, as long as that momentum doesn't change, you know, there could be more justice achieved. But I think we have to take hard looks at our law, at law enforcement and how they understand, you know, it starts with these domestic cases. And the first trouble of getting people to report is just getting them to feel like they're believed when they walk into a police station, when they go to a clinic. And so there's still a lot of work to
there
be
is.
Done.
The victors yesterday, I think, were brave women who came forward and the other women who supported
Absolutely.
Them and really smart, persistent journalists who fought to bring that story to the public. It's similar to the story that the Boston Globe finally exploded
spotlight.
Open on, spotlight on the spotlight team on sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. There's these huge institutional blocks to getting those stories out. And New York Times had two reporters, and Ronan Farrow, famously for the New Yorker, got out the Weinstein story.
Previously for NBC, by the
correct.
Way.
Correct. He couldn't do it for NBC.
Yeah,
I haven't read his latest book. But, yeah.
But I think, again, that with both cases, whether you're looking at, you know, the Catholic Church abuse scandal or these high-powered, you know, celebrities, whether it's Bill Cosby, whether it's Harvey Weinstein, whether, you know, anyone else, is that they're high profile. And I think, again, we can't ignore, you know, the sex crimes that exist in our society that happen at a very local level in our backyards with trafficking, domestic violence. And that leads to chronic and predatory behavior.
Yep.
And doesn't, as far as how we look at this of as you say, a mixed bag, and I certainly agree with that and understand it, but sentencing is going to be a huge thing here.
Absolutely.
Too. I mean, if it's, from my understanding, is anywhere from 4.5 to 25 years. If you get 4.5, that would be
Yeah, it sounds like we're talking about Roger Stone now again. We don't know. Again, I guess we're going to talk later in the context of politicians. But the medical records here are huge. Is he faking it? I mean, he's got a walker for back pain, which I don't believe. He feigned, he didn't feign it. His blood pressure did shoot up after he was found guilty. I'm sure that's true.
On your way to Rikers.
On your way to Rikers. Yeah. But, you know, they didn't keep him.
Bring it like white coat syndrome. I think that would probably do it, right?
They did not keep him long, however, in the hospital. So I don't have a clear picture of his real health. If he's as seriously ill as he would have us believe, then I don't think he should go to prison forever. I don't believe he is ruined. He has been punished. And I almost think that's great.
He's going to appeal. What was remarkable about this case is there was no longer any physical evidence to be entered in. It was the testimony.
Absolutely.
And the victims stepping forward and giving authentic testimony, and that is pretty remarkable. And maybe shows a turn in the way juries and thought, you know, seven men, you know, looked at this and they found Weinstein to be guilty at least of a couple of the charges, and that's a big step forward.
Do you guys think we'll ever find out what actually happened in that jury room? If somebody will squeal, because it could be very interesting to know whether there was a breakdown, male, female, what happened.
The jury foreman did speak to the press already, although it was not an extensive interview. He talked about how exhausting it was, how confusing it was, how emotional it was, but he didn't answer questions like that. I think we'll get it. I'm sure that'll come out.
There's a book there for somebody.
Yeah.
I was also struck by the victims. They all knew that their names would all be in the newspaper. Yep. Mm-hmm. They were going to be photographed. Yep. They were going to be attacked by Weinstein's attorneys and Weinstein's PR machine. Not just attacked in the courtroom, but attacked outside the courtroom in the media. And for them to all go forward against that is remarkable.
Yeah. What that takes is women finally standing up to the idea that they are shamed by this being done to them. You somehow let it happen to you. None of those women did that. That was like, he did this to me. It's him. And that's a change among women that Me Too has helped bring about. I think that's really important.
Not only that, but 100 people have come forward. 100 women have come forward.
Exactly.
That's extraordinary.
Well, and I think that's what gave this case and these arguments momentum too, I think, is the fact that there were so many numbers of support. But again, I still question, and I think I still slightly fear the lack of support for others and other cases. Yeah. And I think that's where the advocacy comes in. I mean, if you look at our society, we still have trouble talking about sex and relationships in school. We don't have universal like sex ed and healthy relationship discussions. And so imagine what it was being like in that jury room where, you know, all of a sudden you're not just talking about sex, you're talking about sexual violence and you're debating it in a court of law.
And my 94-year-old mother and I were discussing it. And she shocked me because she goes, I don't have any sympathy for those women. I go, what? And she goes, well, they did it with their eyes open. It was Weinstein's defense. You know, they willingly engaged with sex with him in order to advance their career. That's on them. Whoa. So, yes, Jen, we have a ways to go.
Is that generational?
Sure it is, yeah.
So what's the woe there?
What's the woe? To have no... She has five daughters. This is a woman with five daughters, and they're all strong. They're kind of like outspoken, as you know me.
No.
And that she's... I'm the quiet one in the family. she stood up for Weinstein in this case. So I do think that there's a way to go. I also, unlike Libby, because again, there's a generational difference, and I know, Jen, we probably disagree on this too. I do think women bear some responsibility for what happens to them that the Me Too movement would overlook. No is no. I don't believe that. So I don't think we quite have it right. You talked about how our laws and our law enforcement and attitudes have to change. We don't have it right. Mm. I think Me Too does strip men right now of some due process, and that has to be brought back into whack. Mm. It's not. It's the pendulum has swung the other way. And as I've said before, if the pendulum has to be on one extreme or the other, I'm glad it's tending towards the women's, listen to the women this time. But it isn't right. It's not right yet.
Jen, did you want to add anything?
Well, again, I think it is about building, again, you know, this awareness and this strength and being able to speak out. And, you know, there's still a factor of shame, of lack of knowledge, a lack of just preparation to deal with these things. Yes. There is no universal or cohesive process. There is no, you know, elements of assurance in the quote unquote due processes that we have in different systems. How your case gets handled in your local law department, law enforcement department, is very different than how a case gets handled in Hollywood or a college campus. And that is a problem.
Or a church,
you know?
Or, as we saw in the film with Roger Ailes.
Roger Ailes
isn't going to jail, but he did an awful lot of the same kinds of things that this guy's accused of.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible when the verdict was read, Weinstein looked as if he was in disbelief, and he repeated, "I'm innocent. I'm innocent. I'm innocent." Could he possibly believe that he's innocent? I mean, if 100 women step forward, I mean, could it just be that he has this extraordinarily inflated sense of his power and his wealth and his prowess that it wouldn't
because
be wrong?
Everyone in leading up to this, when they were first breaking this story, everyone started saying, well, everyone knew that he was doing this. It was the best kept secret in Hollywood. And yet no one said anything. And because it was sort of enabled, because it was the old, you know, trope, the belief that this is what you do. You sleep your way or you seduce your way to the top.
Look at the acts he committed.
30 seconds.
Okay, look at the acts he committed. He thought women really would enjoy seeing him open up a bathrobe on his 300-pound body and masturbate. Come on! That takes a certain sort of self-deception right there.
Yes, indeed.
Well, we'll end there for segment one, and we'll come back. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Jen Smith, and Rosemary Armeo. We'll be right back. Listening to the music of Midnight North, they're playing at The Hollow in Albany, New York on Friday, February 28th. That's this Friday. It's thehollowalbany.com. For more information, our playlist is on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. We continue our conversation this morning. Alan has letters. Alan.
So far, we don't have that many letters. I only have three in front of me.
Let's read those.
Yeah, sure. Leslie said, he's been punished? Did I actually hear Rosemary?
You did.
Correctly, she said Weinstein has already been punished, I'm hoping I misheard her. The powerful need to be punished. Far too often there is no accountability for the powerful. And that's from Leslie. Go ahead, Rosemary.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to go to jail. If you remember, I prefaced that. He will get some significant jail time, considering that he is owed it in this case and he has another one to face him. But I think he's already been ruined. He's out of business. He has lost his reputation, his family. He is a model now of ridicule.
He's become a verb.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's a significant punishment, and I don't know, jail time is not the only way you punish someone.
Is the judge allowed to factor that in when they decide his sentence?
I think they're more likely to consider his health.
But he still has the money. Yes.
What money does he have? Come on, compared to what he used to have, does not.
How much do you need?
But more than
well,
most.
He's not going to be living in a... You know, in a studio apartment.
Can you imagine this guy 30 days in Rikers? Even 30 days in Rikers, the
worst
prison
in America? I mean, that's a punishment right there, yes. No, I feel like, I could live with... Roger Stone, on the other hand, no punishment. He has had no punishment. He has been smug and berating the judge and defending himself. It's not the same with Weinstein.
Okay, so we heard from Gunnar, who says, good morning, panel. As much as Weinstein's conviction means for the Me Too movement, what does the panel think about the fact that our president has yet to answer for any of his sexually predatory behavior? Parenthesis, sorry, I hate that everything always ends up coming back to Trump.
It's a good question, and it's coming. You know, Weinstein went a long, long time before he had his day in court, because court cases, as David Soares keeps telling us, go on forever in the preparation. You want to line up all your evidence. It's happening. There are several women still in litigation against Trump, and I still think that his day is coming.
So if Trump loses, it's more likely to have that happen than if he wins.
He'll be a private citizen then.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's more likely to face the consequences, the legal consequences.
I think it'd be more like Roger Ailes if you know, I'm just speculating, should it get that far, that there'll probably be a lot of civil settlements and non-disclosure agreements and stuff like that.
And I think that's the frustrating thing for the general public, is when you see that, you know, not all of these quote unquote punishments are created equal, that there's, which then sort of indicates there are different levels of accountability or non-accountability based on how much clout or income or what have you. And, you know, I think that is problematic, and it's frustrating beyond belief.
I do not believe, though, it was the court system that's completely responsible for Trump. The American public knew of the charges against him, just as they knew about him on Cosby and Weinstein, but they turned against Weinstein and Cosby, and Trump they elected to the highest office in the land. That's that's on the voters.
We've heard from Corrine, who says, good morning. Will Weinstein seek a pardon? And if so, would Trump grant one? Your thoughts? Thank you for all you do, Corrine in New Paltz.
Not until after November.
And I don't know of a connection between the two. Is there? I don't think they were.
I think they're on opposite ends.
There are two different connections. This morning during his press conference in Delhi, he said he didn't know the guy very much aside from he was in New York. And then, earlier this past year, he said that, you know, he's known him for a long time. But I don't think they're on each other's radars in that
That's
way.
That's a sign, at a pardon though. If he says he doesn't know him, that means he's distancing himself.
Yeah, of course.
When he says, I don't really know, he's my second son, I didn't know him that well, then you know Eric is in trouble.
All right. Other stories this morning, and we welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. All right. Let's go to the other big story today, which, of course, is the debate in South Carolina that will take place tonight. You may remember, it was a really long time ago, I believe Thursday, there was a debate in Las Vegas, and that was prior to the, or was it Wednesday? I guess it was Wednesday. It was prior to the Nevada caucus. And now, just less than a week later, we have the South Carolina debate that is taking place. And I don't know about you all, but I just thought to myself while I was watching that debate last week, you know what? There's just not enough candidates. Oh, my God, there just aren't enough people up there on stage. And then, lo and behold,
Tom Steyer
comes in and saves the day. And now we'll have seven people on the stage tonight, I assume, going after Bernie Sanders.
Well, it was 26, Joe.
I know. I just thought we were making progress with six. I thought we were headed in that direction.
Well, I think that Bernie is in for it tonight, that's for sure, whether or not it'll work for him, in the same way that we all know that the president is always talking about his phony call about the deep state. There will be the Bernieites, the people, the Bernie bros, people who really support him fiercely. I was sitting there in the doctor's office the other day, an old friend came over and wouldn't leave me alone, and talked a lot about why Bernie was sure to win the presidency, and here's the way it's going to work. So the people who are backing Bernie are tremendously faithful. We know that 90% of the Republican Party have not deserted this president, no matter what he does or no matter what he says. And I have a feeling among the people who are supporting Bernie, you're going to get the same kind of thing. Now, what was interesting to me was this whole Castro fluff that's going on.
Yeah. Interview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And here's Bernie saying Castro did some good things, you know, universal education.
Mussolini got the trains on time.
Well, exactly right. That's exactly right. But he was a dictator. There's no question. And he did put people who didn't agree with him in jail. And we know that. So that Bernie is going to have to live with that. On the other hand, I was thinking about this morning. The president of the United States says, I love the Russians. I love the Russians and I love Putin. So we have a president who says he loves Putin. The Republicans, of all people, are supporting him, like 90% of the Republicans are supporting him. You really do wonder what's happened to this world.
Now, the Bernie Sanders camp came out yesterday, and their campaign manager for Bernie Sanders said that Senator Sanders said nothing that President Barack Obama didn't say when he was trying to strengthen relationships with Cuba as president of the United States.
Yep, it's true. I agree with what he said about Fidel Castro. He has built up an amazing medical system, and universal education and health is far better in Cuba than it is in the U.S. There, but I'm not running for president. Mm-hmm. So I also agree with his stand on Palestine, which is very anti-Israeli. I think he's right on that, too. Mm-hmm. But it's that very willingness to speak out on issues like that that are so sensitive in the United States that is going to be a problem for him if the millennials who agree with him do not support him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having some deja vu of 4 years ago, kind of at this point as the dozen or more Republicans were all attacking Trump and saying he's speaking his mind. Very different in some regards, certainly on issues than Bernie Sanders, but speaking out and being, contrary. And saying that'll never work, he'll never win, we have to replace him, never Trump, and all that stuff. And he went on to win the election. I mean, it does have that ring to me right now.
Well, it's, they say that Bernie, that's the argument of the Bernie bros, he will win because he can bring Trump supporters over to his side. He campaigns in the similar way and does say what he really thinks. He's authentic.
And I agree with you, Mike, that it is almost a mirror of 4 years ago that they say it's just 30. He only has 30% of the Republicans and Bernie has just 30% of the Democrats. And there is also this thinking of, oh, well, once Bernie wins the nomination, maybe he'll moderate his views. No, he's not going to do that.
Trump didn't do that either.
He's not going to pick a vice president, and he's not going to pick a vice president who moderates his views either.
Right.
And I see tonight's debate, what we saw with the pileup on Bloomberg was a very inexperienced debater going up for his first time being fed to a bunch of rabid dogs. Bernie has gone through dozens of these presidential debates. He's one of the best debaters. He knows he is not explaining like Mike Bloomberg and saying, bah, bah, bah. Bernie Sanders is on offense 100% of the time, just like Donald Trump is. And I think it's going to be very – they're going to attack him tonight. It's going to be very hard to lay a glove on him or set him off his game or get onto him. What issues are they going to attack him on? And how are they going to get under his skin? I think it's going to be very hard for that to happen.
But then how do also, if the attention's focused on that way, how will the other candidates, gain control of
the narrative, sure.
The narrative and also in a unique state where they have to convince a very, hard sought after voter block of predominantly black voters.
Well, but this is also, and I think a lot of analyses have concluded, this is really the Super Tuesday debate. It is the South Carolina debate, and that's really important. That's on Saturday.
Very important because
it could make it or break it for Biden. I mean, that I absolutely can't imagine.
Right, and I think it's a huge test for Biden what happens tonight, too.
But it's the last big shot that they have before a week from today when Super Tuesday happens.
Okay, so everybody gangs up on Bernie. Mm-hmm. There's a big kerfuffle. He handles himself well. Does Mike Bloomberg get to show something tonight?
Can he?
Well, he has a chance.
Let's put it this way. As Ethel Pearls once said, he just better.
Yeah. I'm going to watch the debate with Libby and a bunch of Bloomberg supporters tonight because of that very tension. He has to do it.
He just can't stay away.
It was so, so, so grim the other day.
Well,
oh,
I think
God.
His big mistake was doing it at all. I've said that from the beginning. He didn't need the debate. He had all of the airtime he needed and he wanted.
There's something, I guess, a couple $1 million can't buy.
Yeah.
The other thing to remember about specifically tonight is Joe Biden is currently up in the polls, and I think a lot of those non-Bernie candidates see Biden as having votes that they could potentially gobble up. So I wouldn't be surprised if you also see some Biden attacks. He's much more susceptible to being body slammed than Bernie.
On the other hand, JP, he is in a position, obviously, where he's only 5 points up. Bernie is only 5 points up, or 4 points up, depending on how you read those polls. So if Joe Biden wins, it takes some of the air out of the sails of Bernie, right? I mean, so there's got to be a thinking on some of their parts that it's better to be Biden than if it's Bernie. Because if Bernie wins in South Carolina, game over.
What do we think, though, too, of... What's different between Nevada and here is the moderators. And I think the moderators in the last debate really set them up to kind of set up for a fiery evening. So, but will we get the same from tonight is something I'm also looking about.
Who are they?
I don't know, but I hope so.
All right.
Gail King.
Maybe Nora O'Donnell.
Oh, is it CBS?
Yes.
It's CBS.
Oh, okay. So no.
There you go.
So the answer is no.
So, who's gonna be the instigator among the seven on stage?
Well, that's right.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue right after this.
Voices tell you just to give into anxiety.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Jen Smith, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We just ask that you send them to the right address, panel at WAMC.org. You keep them short, you proofread them, and we'll be good to go. You've got some in front of you now, Alan.
I do. And Joe, I just want to thank you for assembling this magnificent panel. I mean, you guys are terrific. Really great.
Assembly required.
Okay, so anyway, Judy says, Weinstein jail time. Wow. Being disgraced is no, capital N-O, substitute for jail time. Why do poor people always, capital always, get jail time and rich people skate with a slap on the wrist? That's not justice, says Judy.
Justice in this country is so revengeful. And I think Maddox should come out too. What's his name? The financier.
Maddox.
I think he's got Bernie like Madoff. Madoff. See, I can't say his name. It's like
because he's despicable.
Yeah, he is despicable. But I don't think keeping him in jail for the last 18 months of his life does any more. And he should come out. And I think that poor are treated horribly in jail as far as imprisonment, and that should change too. It should be more freedom for poor people, not less for the wealthy in order to even things up.
And when you get something like the bail reform in New York State,
right?
Okay, which speaks directly to your point,
right?
Which is that you let people who don't have resources out in the same way you let people who have a lot of money out on bail, and yet that one thing may doom the Democrats in New York State to keeping the New York State Senate, for example, because it's what it's the only thing the Senate
the bail reform.
That's right, and it is working according to a lot of people who know better.
Well, it's causing a division among Democrats, so they're basically upstate, downstate, and it's a wedge issue, absolutely.
So,
but to your point, though, Rosemary, I think there's two different issues when it comes to dealing with people who've been convicted of crimes. One is justice, to do what's right, to give a equitable settlement to victims and to properly
match the crime to the
punishment.
Right,
match the crime, exactly. And then there's another thing called mercy, and we don't seem to have that in our... Mercy is, you did do it, you're guilty, but we have the ability to extend that when it merits it. Somebody dying, somebody, what good does it do to have an elderly person in prison?
Well, let me.
Except it might be the better thing for some people because they have no place to go.
I keep having the image, and I'm taking a risk here because I'm going to refer to the Nazi era. Okay, I'm not comparing anybody to the Nazis. I'm not Chris Matthews. But here's the thing. Do you remember Albert Speer? He was the architect of the Third Reich, and he was the last prisoner in this entire gigantic complex built to hold Nazi prisoners. All the rest had died off or been pardoned or released, and they kept him in prison because that was his punishment. And they paid for the guards and the money and the upkeep, huge amounts of money that perhaps could have gone to schools or to recompense for victims of the Nazis. But they did it to keep that man in jail.
Eight million people died?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've got to say, Rosemary, for whatever it's worth, there are times somebody comes along, kills a family, and then we in our infinite justice system say, okay, we're not going to kill anybody anymore. Now you go to jail for the rest of your life.
Right.
Shouldn't it really be the rest of their lives?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. In that case, I mean, to me, that seems crazy. But at that era, when you consider 8 million people, perhaps that was justified. But in our country, we do it to everybody. You know, we have sentences on drug crimes that are just outlandish. We're wrecking communities and families for the idea of our idea of justice, which is merciless. I think that...
And there's a complete failure to recognize any kind of rehabilitation and any... And yet, it's so less expensive to run a prison system that rehabilitates people and lets them find something to do when they get out. Recidivism goes way down when someone has been educated. But
right, because those systems are not set up for rehabilitation at
all.
They're not facilities.
Set up for punishment.
Nope.
Yeah. So back to the letters or not?
Yes.
Okay. Kathy says, Bernie for the Senate. Dear panel, if Bernie's elected, will Vermont's Republican governor, Phil Scott, be able to appoint a Republican to fill out Bernie's term, making a Senate flip that much harder? For that matter, how many Democratic senators running for president come from states with Republican governors? And that's Kathy from North Bennington who asks an excellent question.
I don't think that Bernie has to resign to run for the presidency. I don't think that he has to resign his seat. Does he?
Well, let's say he wins, though.
When he wins, yes. And he's
okay. If he wins, yes.
So we do know that Lyndon Johnson had a special law passed in Texas, which, if my memory serves, allowed him to run for both Senate and president at the same time.
Yeah, well, Joe Lieberman did.
Joe Lieberman, yeah.
In Connecticut for vice president. And it's hedging your bets in case you win one, you still got the other one if you don't win the other one.
I say you pays your money, you take your chance. Hmm. What can I say? Okay, and John, Bloomberg's anti-common man statements. Dear Alan and panel, Bloomberg's blaming financial crisis on low-income people buying homes when redlining was removed is a total false and misleading statement. As a real estate broker during that time period, I watch lender after lender tell new buyers that their no down payment and no interest loan would be covered by increasing equity in their home, and eventually the increasing equity would prevent any financial problems. Truth was, homes lost equity and variable rate and balloon mortgage resulted in foreclosure. Stop your undermining of Bernie. He's the common man's best hope. John from Bennington, Vermont.
I do agree that, you know, everybody hits Bloomberg about stop and frisk, which he deserves to be hit on, and they also hit him about his treatment of his employees, and especially women employees. But his comments that attributed the 2008 financial crisis to redlining are really offensive. It was exactly as that writer just said. This has been demonstrated. It was extraordinarily risky lending on the parts of banks trying to cash in, and it all fell apart. It wasn't redlining or the rules against redlining and poor people buying houses. It was the banking institutions that bear the blame.
Bigger...
Yeah, they're not paying the price. The poor people who lost their houses are, but I agree with the writer.
On the other hand, Robert writes us, Mike Bloomberg, dear panel, being a billionaire is no stain on Michael Bloomberg, as some of the panel and many of the commentators suggest. How has he used his fortune? To promote gun control, to fight opioid addiction, to aid cities by supporting infrastructure programs and help the underserved? He's the great American tradition in the great American tradition of other philanthropists like the Rockefellers, Andrew Carnegie, the Havemeyers, and others. Additionally, as mayor of New York City for three terms, he has proven himself more than capable as a political leader. That's Robert from Preston Hollow. You know, I go around, I talk to an awful lot of people who say they're voting for Bloomberg.
It's a bargain. They're doing what a lot of Republicans or fundamentalist Christians have done with Trump. They don't like him. They have so many things they don't like about him, but they got their Supreme Court justices, or they got their tax cut if they're wealthy, or some other thing. You know, they got a regulation removed, so they don't like Trump, but they vote for him. And you could rationalize anything, I guess.
Yes, sure, well, rationalize is a tough word, but which brings us, you know, back to this issue as to whether Bernie can win. If he can beat Trump, Bernie would be an ideal candidate. Whether he can or not is being discussed from one end of America to the other.
Well, and Bernie, for his part, is quoting a lot of polls, and the thing that struck me when he was quoting the polls yesterday is those numbers seem really close. I was,
yes.
Goes, and
no
in this
margin.
Poll, it's 44%, and I have 46%. I'm thinking, I'm a little scared.
Yes.
Speaking of scared, do you think that the comments that he made regarding Elizabeth Warren that resurfaced yesterday, meaning Mike Bloomberg, about Elizabeth Warren will matter.
What are you saying?
Will be brought up tonight. I think he said she was scary.
Well, on the other hand, we all remember Bernie being accused of saying a woman could, telling her, you should be running because a woman can't win. So that goes to everybody, yeah. Right?
Again, as for Cuba and Palestine, I think Bernie's right, but he says it and others don't. I think it would do Elizabeth Warren a favor if Bloomberg, if that comes up and she has to discuss it, because Bloomberg's not the only one who thinks that. I have my sister, who's an educator. She's a journalist. She feels that way. My friend's son, educated, Bostonian, a financier, likes everything about Elizabeth Warren, but finds her kind of, you know, untenable, unlikable. So it would be good for her to address that. I think there's a lot of misogyny in that kind of feeling, and it would be good to air it.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much to talk about. We will do just that right after this. Yeah, we didn't see the moon rise, hear the spinning. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller. We have Jen Smith and Rosemary Armeo. Al, just hit my funny bone. Just hit her chair. That's okay. Doing a little calisthenics. why should there be a bone in my body that doesn't hurt? We're going to go to the letters, and then we want to talk about the candidates and medical records, which is another big story to talk about today. We'll get to that in just a second. We'll go to letters first.
Okay. Jeff says, Albert Speer, good morning, panel. If my history is correct, Albert Speer got out after 10 years in prison. You may be thinking of Rudolf Hess.
Right. I am sorry. That is absolutely correct.
Albert Speer was in Hess. Spandau Prison in Germany. Rudolf Hess was locked in the Tower of London.
Yes.
He might have been moved after the war.
No, you are right. And it was Spandau, which was the empty prison that they kept open. Thank you for that. Everyone
Thank
needs
you.
An editor.
Thank Rick. You, listeners.
We have a wonderful audience. Okay, Alan says, sick. Why is illness a reason to avoid jail time? Alan and Cahos.
It's not
mercy.
It isn't illness. It's death. He's a terminally ill. It's expensive.
Yeah.
You don't get good care. You don't get to be near your family. I'm sorry. A little bit of mercy. It saves us money and does not detract from what they did at all, in my view.
Okay. And Barbara says, women's rights. Many women will still continue to have reservations on coming forward against abuse, discrimination, and inequality until the Equal Rights Amendment is finally, in capital letters, passed. How many years do we have to sit by while reproductive rights are taken away, pay is not equal to men, cost of health insurance is higher, and women over 25 pay more for car insurance than men? It's been 48 years since originally proposed. Shameful.
I hear you, sister.
Nicholas says, primaries. Dear panel, Alan keeps saying it's over if South Carolina goes to Sanders. Super Tuesday is only a few days later, and even then, that only represents 38% of delegates. Let's wait to see what's happened. Nicholas from Westfield.
That's what they said 4 years ago with Donald Trump. They said, there's no way that guy can be the nominee. Don't worry about it. Someone will emerge.
R. Jeremy says, Bernie and Donnie. One more Bernie-Donnie similarity. Both are using victimhood and grievance to create a base. Instead of inspiring a positive future, the appeal is to get what's due and punish opponents. Demonizing and division instead of unity. Not good, says R. Jeremy.
And they and their opponents are both looked with spite by the mainstream corporate media.
And we heard from Mike from Clifton Park. Urgent, urgent, emergency. Isn't it time for urgent and creative measures by the moderates? Obama needs to exert some leadership and urge non-competitive candidates to drop out and put his weight behind someone who can win. Maybe an early disclosure of a VP to balance a ticket by age, race, or geography. Mike from Clifton Park. Shall I keep reading, Joe? Or
please,
what do you want?
Yes.
Okay. Susan says, Russia and Bernie. Does the panel think Russia is helping Bernie as reported because he thinks he's the best Democratic candidate that will lose against Trump? Could be.
I think there are multiple reasons for Russia to be supporting Trump. That's one of them. Another is simply that he is helping to break up the Democratic Party in the same way Trump did the Republican.
But and this is about Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie. Yeah, Bernie's helping to break up the Democratic Party. And so anything that sows chaos and lack of organization and also lack of moderation without parties, we get the crazies coming.
It will cast out.
And while we're on the subject of clarification, I want to clarify something myself. David and I did a commentary the other morning in which we said GE was withdrawing matching grants. I, of course, wrote a column on this for next week. But it's from people who have retired from
retirees,
GE.
Yes.
I just want to make that quite clear. Weinstein was convicted of state charges. I believe the president can only pardon those convicted of federal crimes. And that's from Janice. Of course, that's right.
Good point.
Yeah. And Byron says, Bernie's electability. Dear esteemed panel, it's finally come around. I no longer think Bernie is unelectable. Hillary had serious flexibility issues, plus lost a percentage of Bernie supporters, many to Trump. Even with that, she still managed to win the popular vote. A good number of the 2016 Trump voters I've spoken with either no longer support him or at least question their choice. Many simply did not like Hillary. He only needs to add a few votes in key states, add that up, and Sanders is very, capital letters, electable. And said Dean, P.S., he's right about Castro. Fair is fair.
Wait, is that letter suggesting that Bernie Sanders is flexible? Because if so, I discount everything else in it. He is nothing if not consistent and unflexible.
Is it un or in?
In.
Well, you know.
Everyone needs an edit. I keep saying that today.
He's got some spokespeople who are quite belligerent sometimes when they're being interviewed, but they do point out that he's been consistent. You know, he really hasn't wavered a whole lot.
That's an underestimated quality in politicians. If you listen to people like James Carville, they say strong and wrong is better than weak and right. And so a consistent message from someone who they believe is authentic and talking authentically rather than other candidates who just wishy-washy on every issue. Well, I didn't mean that when I said strong is a good quality.
Isn't there a difference between wishy-washy, though, and not changing your position as the times change?
Well, that sounds like spin to me.
If you want to be elected, I would say strong and wrong is better than weak and right. Not what is better morally, but strong and wrong is a way to get elected. You look at George W. Bush versus John Kerry. You look at George W. Bush versus, you know,
I keep wanting to not believe, Rosemary, that we're doomed. And then you come out with something like that.
Here's this letter. Good morning. Bernie is a death sentence. He gets the nomination and Trump wins again. He doesn't, and his supporters will not vote for the Democratic candidate. That's from Kevin.
I believe that is true, but I am not a Bernie supporter, as you know. But I do have to say that I don't think Bernie is strong and wrong. I think that his ideas were way ahead of the time. And it is to his benefit that he has pushed the Democratic Party and the country as a whole to consider issues like income inequality. And that's one of the pluses. Bernie can win if the millennials, who are so strongly in support of him and who outnumber the boomers, who will not be supportive of him, come out to vote. So I have this argument with my kids, both my college students and my own sons, saying that the responsibility is now theirs. The baton is passed to them.
And we just saw the stock market drop 3% in one day yesterday. If that happened a couple days in a row, this coming September or October, no matter who's on the Democratic ticket, they're going to beat Trump in November.
Well, let me just say, we're saved, I tell you, saved. Because the stock market is now, according to the television up on the wall here, up 53 points out of the 1,000 we lost yesterday. Yeah.
But that's par for the course. I think we've been seeing that for the past at least 2 years of this wild fluctuation. And I think it's
53 points is nothing, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, will that be an ultimate indicator? I don't think so.
Well, you mean if the stock market is down, it is certainly going to hurt. And it's certainly going to hurt Trump's reelection, right?
If it can be attributed to the coronavirus, and like this one is pretty attributable to that. I don't know that Trump bears all the brunt of the negatives on it. But if the stock market were to go down because of a protracted trade war with China.
And that's what I'm more interested in watching what happens there. I mean, you know, that was one of the big things that was supposed to happen in India.
And it did not happen.
It did absolutely not.
Well, no, I think Aaron has it right that whatever the reason, if the stock market is down in the 3 months preceding the November election, Trump is going to get a hit for it.
Yeah, there's a debate about how many months it has to be down.
Some he says 3 or 4.
April is the snapshot. If it's good in April, he's good to go.
Exactly.
And while we're on the subject, we have sitting with us in this room an expert on India, where Trump is and has just been. What do you make of this?
Well, I'm no expert, even though that's my birth lineage. But there was nothing. What can you really accomplish in 36 hours? And so I think you saw what was to be expected in India. You saw a lot of pageantry, a lot of back padding, but not a lot of substance in terms of policy negotiation, not a lot of acknowledgement of what was going on there. I mean, you had Trump in one part of the city, and he kind of really skirted around the issue of the violence that was happening down the road in terms of protests. He said, let India deal with it. That was his choice. And, he argued, on one hand, he kept saying Modi is tough, but when it comes to actually formulating any of the trade agreements that both India and the U.S. have been promising, but nothing concrete came out of that. You have the purchasing of defense. So, it's indicated that India has agreed to buy, a few billion dollars worth of helicopters. But it's nothing certainly surprising at all. And in terms of brokering, one of the things he didn't do was talk really about Pakistan and the relationships there. He didn't really talk Kashmir at all, which was an opportunity. Trump says he's friends with both Modi and Imran Khan, but again, did nothing to facilitate that conversation at all. Was it good optics for Trump in India? Sure. He had
beautiful
a captive audience of of many, but did it accomplish anything? I don't think so.
Offended? Well, is anyone offended that
I'm offended
that,
by a lot?
He basically put his stamp on Modi as being the father of India and saying everything he did was right, and yet Modi is the one who's got a program that basically disallows Muslims from becoming citizens.
Well, right. You have two, essentially, from a philosophical standpoint, nationalists meeting with one another. And, again, there was no acknowledgement of what was happening with the Citizenship Amendment Act. And again, even more audacious, you have Trump saying, like, this is a great nation where all these religions and all these dialects and all
except
these things
Muslim.
Come together. Muslims. And Modi, again, typical Modi, did not take the stage at all to either uphold or defend himself. He hasn't had a press conference in, you know,
longer than
nearly
Trump.
A decade. So, you know, that is all problematic. So that stage, again, was not set for that. Again, the stage was not set. And if you listen to the press conference, and I urge people to go back and listen just to get context, because we don't talk about that world part of the world very much in terms of international politics and policy, but it is really important. It is a big landmass. It has a developing economy. It could play out as the Chinese builds its coalitions in other Asian countries are around, you know, which is why you have the defense agreement in terms of you know, buying the helicopters. You had the joint military practices last fall, but the world doesn't pay enough attention to that. And so I don't think at the end of the day this is going to have much impact, and I don't think it will deliver what I think a lot of people were hoping it would deliver, which was, you know, fostering a sense of diplomacy in that region and also building the trade agreement. Mm.
All right. Let's go back to some letters, and okay. Then we'll go to medical records.
Let's go to Megan, who wants to come back to Weinstein. I'm confused by Rosemary's comments this morning. She thinks that Me Too has gone too far. How? And what are the women supposed to be taking responsibility for? Also, would she think someone who isn't famous and who had 100%, no, excuse me, had hundreds of rape allegations against them would be punished enough by getting bad press? Megan.
I covered a rape case years ago in Akron, Ohio, where a physician, he was a black physician, raped. Their allegations were around 100 women. And yes, was sentenced to life in prison. So, but again, it was women there. This was at a time when rape was clearly considered something that women were involved in. They were to blame. And they all went to court in Akron, Ohio, and stood up. They said, use my name. Newspapers didn't, because they all had policies then not to name her. But they all stood up and said, use my name. This is what he did to me. And they stood those questions one after another. It was one of the most powerful events I went to. Women don't do that enough. They rightly, it's nothing wrong, but they do blame society for making them feel bad, shaming them, and so they stay quiet. And so the result has been that men have had the advantage in our criminal system. Me Too has changed things. It's shaken it up, I think that's great. And it's moved it now the other way. But we do have instances, many of them now, where the due process is gone. And it's, as Jen has said, structural. Our laws are set up that you need witnesses to crimes. And rape and sexual harassment rarely has witnesses. So how can you win that with
but,
due process?
You know, as you were talking about this, I was thinking, that's why I was scurrying to my phone to look it up. You know, is this comparable to the sentencing that Larry Nassar got? Will this, you know, play out. I mean, he is essentially going to be, but he is younger.
Yes.
Exactly.
But again, this a high profile case, you know, scores of young women
stood up. Yep.
Stood up.
Athletes.
Yet there's still more problems. There's still more allegations in that field too.
Anyway, John from Great Barrington writes us, dear panel, do you think Bernie will come after Biden tonight, trying to topple him in the South Carolina primary?
Yeah.
John from Great Barrington. Sure. Would make sense. Drew says, Trafficking Victims Protection Act. This past December, a woman named Lisa Riccio won the first lawsuit against a hotel or motel under the Trafficking Victims Protection Act after an 8-year legal process. There are now 25 additional women who have filed similar suits. I think this is another important story in the ongoing process of making sure women are heard and protected, and unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be getting enough press. And also, we heard from Deborah, who says, dear panel, this is the subject is Rosemary, sexual predators being in jail when convicted just because he was rich and lost reputation is not sufficient. Deborah.
Okay, let's just kill them all. Mm-hmm. Castrate them all. Come on.
Well, there's some people who
who agree
probably
with
agree
that.
To the latter.
Bring back a little Hammurabi code.
Right.
Okay, right. And then we heard from Gene, who said, Bernie's principles. After a lot of thought, I've decided I don't want Bernie Sanders to moderate his views about Cuba or health care or anything. The great thing about Bernie that puts him the head and shoulders above all the other candidates for me is that he's remained true to his principle for 40 years or more and has held public
office. Right or wrong, he's consistent.
We can actually believe in him. That is impossible to say about all those candidates who pretend to believe whatever will get them elected, and that's Gene from somewhere. Okay, and then we heard from Rob on the Weinstein question. Weinstein's predation was enabled by his sense of power. Abuse of power must be confronted and held accountable. There are just too many powerful people who think they're above the law. Rob from Rensselaerville. And then we heard from Teresa, who says, Sanders, listen to Sanders' 2018 speech at Johns Hopkins on the worldwide rise of authoritarian versus egalitarianism for accurate viewers' positions rather than selective sound bites.
You know, everybody's praising him for being consistent and speaking out on these things and not changing his opinion, but he's not completely open and honest. I mean, you know, he's not truthful about his health conditions. He's only released letters from doctors saying he's in pretty good shape.
We're talking about Bernie now?
Yeah,
yes.
Bernie.
Okay.
Yeah. He's getting a lot of credit for not changing his political positions on a lot of things, but he's not open. You know, I mean, he's kind of hiding some stuff there.
And
think.
All he's done for 40 years is talk. There's nothing he can point to that say, hey, here's the first step towards income equality, or name any of his other policies that he want towards more realistic drug laws or better handling of student debt. Here's what I've done. It's a building block. It isn't enough. There are none. There are none of those.
Well, I'm talking about him being 78 years old, having a couple of months ago had a heart attack.
Yes, five months ago.
Not being honest about that, saying his campaign said he had
chest
pains.
Wait, you're talking about Sanders now, right?
Sanders, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yes. And then he's the other guy who's 78, you know, who has stents. And Michael Bloomberg has stents, but he didn't have a heart attack. But Bernie did. And you know, I mean, if he's going to be this guy who's consistent, he also has to be full disclosure. He has to be open. And I think is going to cost him some credibility.
Bernie writes, hello, panel, and thank you for always having us.
Dub Bernie? He's listening?
Oh, no, you are so right. And thanks for calling me on that. Judy writes, and her subject line is Bernie.
Ah.
Okay. Hello, panel, and thank you for always having a thought-provoking show. Yes, Bernie Sanders has been consistent, especially in not supporting gun control. Why is no one talking about that? Why is he getting a free pass? How many more mass shootings will change his mind? If he gets the nomination, I will be very hard pressed to support him.
And there has been talk that last week's debate in Las Vegas, where the largest, I believe, mass shooting in the United States history happened, and they did not hit Bernie on that, was a huge missed opportunity, not just for the moderators, but also for the other candidates.
The moderation.
Yeah, Bloomberg had a shot. He should have done it. Well, he wasn't great in that debate.
I will say Biden took a vague shot at the end to Bernie, but didn't on that subject. But it wasn't.
Should have, could have, would have.
Yeah, it was very late in the game.
And Kate writes, Weinstein verdict and Jen Smith's comments regarding local domestic violence cases. Dear panel, the juxtaposition of Weinstein verdict, parenthesis, a wealthy, powerful white man, and local domestic violence cases like Nicole Adimondo in Poughkeepsie, New York, who was sentenced last week to 19 years to life for defending herself against her abuser of over 10 years, warrants further discussion. The judge in Nicole's case said during sentencing that while some of the things her abuser did to her, parenthesis, rape, might have made her, quote, uncomfortable, end quote, she quote, reluctantly consented. I disagree with Rosemary here. There is either consent or it's rape. The nuances of intimate partner violence needs to be brought to light with admiration. Kate from Hyde Park. Okay.
I'm not familiar with that case.
Yeah.
It sounds
But it definitely merits a further discussion. Yeah, and I think that's my case, is that there is no consistency, if we're using that phrase today, among due process and sentencing when it comes to domestic violence, sexual assault, mm-hmm. and rape.
Mm-hmm. Eric says rape is rape. I understand what Rosemary means when she says Weinstein has already been punished. But we are a nation of laws, and he needs to answer to the law. That means jail. Who cares about what he's lost? There are laws. Let's follow them. Eric from Richmond, our very good friend, Eric, the director.
Eric, make no mistake. He is going to jail. He has already been sentenced to two felonies that have jail time.
Convicted, right.
Yeah. And he already is, he's on his way to Los Angeles for more. He will face jail. Our question was whether life in jail, a life sentence, was.
Well, in his
and
case,
he was not convicted of that one. And I think the jury, as I said, was applied a higher standard. And they should have. They did have a reasonable doubt about the woman's whose testimony was required to be believed in order to bring about that conviction.
And we heard from Barbara in Ulster County. I like your panel and discussion very much, and I currently listen from afar on your app. That's, if you don't know where the app is, it's WAMC.org. You can go there, go on your Sirius or whatever else, and find WMC.org. I listen to all around the world. But anyway, listen from afar on your app. But I must take strong exception to Rosemary's flippant description of
Weinstein. I'm not flippant. Come on, you may disagree with me, but I think about this. I read a lot. I've been involved with it for years. So I object to that term.
And I don't object to your objecting.
Thank you.
Okay, so anyway, but I must take strong exception to Rosemary's flippant description of Weinstein's act being objectionable to women based on his obesity. His criminality is not based on his attractiveness. It's a very interesting question. Even if he were a perfectly physical specimen, the actions he forced on these women would be criminal. It's important to make that clear, please. And that's from
Barbara. No, listen. It was central to this case. His physicality came out in testimony after testimony by the women. He is a huge 300-pound man who came close to these women and dominated them. And it absolutely is part of the case.
All right. I was afraid to get in the way there, but we only had
Thank
10
you.
Seconds.
So, I know. No, I wish I was brief.
No, you were. You were it was perfect. Thank you. And I don't find you scary. We're gonna put
poor
this tape
Elizabeth.
Up. Yeah, poor
Elizabeth.
We'll be right back after this. Hey, there are new poll numbers out. They were just released from Marist. Do you all want to hear them?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay,
in
the South Carolina presidential primary for the Democratic nomination, Joe Biden, with 27%, narrowly beats Bernie Sanders at 23% among likely Democratic voters, including those who are undecided yet leaning toward a candidate or who have already voted. Tom Steyer receives 15% of the likely Democratic electorate. 15%. No other candidate in the field achieves double-digit support. 27% of the likely Democratic primary voters remain persuadable. That is, those who are undecided or who may change their minds prior to the primary, that according to our good friend Lee Mieringoff. So Biden with 27, Sanders with 23, Steyer with 15, Buttigieg at 9, Warren at 8, Klobuchar with 5, undecided 9%.
Well, this, by the way, is pretty consistent between the two top leaders with what we've been seeing from other pollsters. So it could be so accepted. It's got to be within the
margin of error. Right, it is. All right. So let's go to the story about health records. In a historically old presidential field, candidates refuse to release health records. In the run-up for the 1976 presidential campaign, Senator Frank Church of Idaho revealed that cancer had claimed his left testicle. Jimmy Carter disclosed that he had trouble swallowing due to an allergy to beans and Swiss cheese. And when he ran for president in 2000 and 2008, John McCain released more than 1,000 pages of medical records, including a psychiatric report that divulged his histrionic personality. At that moment in time, the idea of telling the national media to pound sand on the matter of his medical records was not reality, said former McCain advisor Steve Schmidt. There was a sense of obligation. Today, it's safe to say that sense of obligation has vanished. A little over 3 years ago, The 70-year-old, I just lost my place. My apologies. Hold on 1 second.
We're with you, Joe. We're with you.
Not scrolling
well here. Today, the sense of obligation has vanished a little over 3 years ago at age 70, and it just did it again. Jab it all.
Who's controlling that computer anyway?
That's an ad popping up there for you.
Yeah. Is it? Okay.
A Tom Steyer ad, probably.
I don't know where he's not.
A little over 3 years ago, Donald Trump was the oldest person, 70 years old. And now we have, and he only released a doctor's letter attesting to his astonishingly excellent, quote, health. Now the contenders for the Democratic nomination, the oldest field in U.S. history, are following his lead. And so the question is,
in other words, saying nothing doing, we're not giving you this.
Or just the letters. Yeah, Four of the six major Democratic candidates are 70 or older, and Senator Bernie Sanders, the polling leader, suffered a heart attack 5 months ago, an episode he first failed to disclose. But the candidates, for the most part, have declined to release full dossiers on their health, relying instead on the Trumpian physician testimonial. Former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg, for example, has released a single page from his doctor declaring the 78-year-old in great physical shape and noting that he plays golf avidly, quote unquote, and has, quote, a pilot's license, end quote.
Well, that one carried a little bit of weight for me because in order to maintain your certification, you have to go through regular physical exams and eye exams, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that means a little
Bush
something.
Did Bush have his license, too? I mean, does that affect your ability to lead?
a three-page letter from Joe Biden calling him a healthy, vigorous 77-year-old male.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is our medical records are now becoming like letters of recommendation for employees. Of course, they're all going to be glowing because you wouldn't ask for a letter of recommendation for anyone to say anything bad. They are meaningless. The American public has the right to know the health of the people that.
And how do you get there? How do you get there?
You're going to have a law eventually. This is another one of those things that were tradition that it was established and people did it, and now they're not doing it, led by Trump and that ridiculous letter from his crazy-ass physician with the long hair. Oh, my God. And now it's the norm. And I'm sorry, Bernie's behavior was not just non-transparent. It was duplicitous. I have chest pressure. Mm-hmm. That's why I had to sit down. He had a heart attack, and he didn't admit to it. And now 5 months later, he's saying, I'm perfectly fine. And that is not medically possible. After you've had a heart attack, you're at increased risk for another heart attack. You're at increased risk for an early death. And he has not ever talked to us about that. So it isn't just Bernie. I agree that I want to hear a whole lot more about Bloomberg. I want to hear a lot about all of them. Mm. And I think we have a right to.
But, you know, here is my question, because I was thinking about that, and I agree with some points that have been made. But do we apply that law to every single, you know, lawmaker we have in the country? Look at the Supreme Court. And, you know, granted, folks have been pretty transparent. But, you know, starting in April, I think 7 of the 9 representatives there will be over the age of 60. And they're going to be in office, so to speak, much longer than the president, making much more long-lasting.
My argument on that is no. First of all, it's a lifetime appointment. It doesn't matter what health they're in. If they're dead, they're out of office, and they don't leave in before then. And number two is it's up to the president who appoints them to get young, vigorous people because they want them to stay on and do as much damage as possible for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. So that you know that they are vetted.
If you're a Republican.
Yeah.
If you're a Democrat, too. No, come on.
What? You think a Democrat is
I think Obama took a look at the health records of anyone he appointed. I think Clinton did.
I think it was to your term damage. That was
we
all.
Agree.
Sorry.
Just damage.
I'm on a roll here.
I'm still thinking, thinking about the guy's right testicle.
Frank Church. He was honest about it. Paul Tsongas ran back then, too, and he would not have lived out a second term if he had been elected president.
A first term.
That's right, 92.
Yeah.
In 1992, he was a candidate, and he wasn't honest about the return of cancer. And you know, John McCain was pretty honest about everything. He told the story about it, and it probably hurt him.
I mean, it probably had people who said, well, he's not in good health, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's an incentive to hide it. I mean, we talked last week about FDR. He was 63 when he ran for his last term, and his doctor said he's in good health. Mm-hmm. He was dying. He died 2 months after he was inaugurated. Right.
Mm-hmm. And he was paralyzed and had suffered the terrible after effects of polio for his entire term.
Surely.
Mm-hmm. Woodrow Wilson was paralyzed. He had a stroke. His wife was running. And Kennedy, who looked so young and vigorous, he got lots of votes because of his
disease.
And terrible back damage as well.
Mm-hmm. But you know, there's also this unpredictability factor. I mean, someone could get something at any time too, you know.
Sure.
It all takes is a tick bite.
Sure.
And you could be completely out of commission.
Which is why we have the right to see their updated yearly physicals, because it's just that sort of thing.
But if this is the big issue that's going to be plaguing Bernie before the South Carolina vote, I think Bernie's in good shape. We've always had presidents where we question their health. Donald Trump, when you look at him, looks like one of the most unhealthy individuals, you know, that you could imagine. You know,
he
eats, McDonald's. Hillary, last campaign, remember, she passed out and was carried in the car by
pneumonia.
The Secret Service agents.
That was a factor. That was a, mm-hmm. he played up on that, which
the
hypocrisy there is unbelievable. But she never should have gone out to that. She should have taken care of herself.
I think that's the other, that's the double edge. I think, you know, if she wasn't there and you say she's unhealthy, then that would also be brought up because she had like the average health problem where you can get a cold or flu or
it's a tough
pneumonia.
One.
But JP, I go back to what Rosemary has said the last couple of times we've talked about this, which is when coming to Bernie Sanders. So if you're okay and everything's fine, then why don't you release the records? Mm. That's what I don't get.
I mean, as a journalist, doesn't that make does that make you wonder what's going on?
I think there's probably something embarrassing in there. And I think that when you talk to your doctor, you have a frank discussion about everything going on in your life. There's something in there that's embarrassing. Do I think that he is on death's door and that they're hiding that? I don't believe that. I think that, like Bernie said, you want to follow him around the campaign trail for a week and see how healthy he is. I think he would outlast all of us on the campaign trail.
But that's meaningless. You know, we don't know what drugs he's taking. We don't know if he has a short burst of energy. Trump, as you say, is not a healthy.
Very unhealthy.
He eats a lot of red meat. he's out on golf. He's running all around India right now. That's meaningless. Adrenaline keeps him going right now.
Okay.
He gets powered up by the crowd. Adrenaline works on heart patients too.
But I think that's the bottom line is, you know, as a journalist, I'm also extremely curious about everyone's health. But at the same time, you know, A, you have HIPAA laws. B, you have, if you get that information, how is it used? How is it ultimately being used once it's out in the public? And I think it, you know, will it, I question whether it will create a lot of more unnecessary, you know, arguments and confusion that overshadow some of the more important issues.
Wow. Nothing is more important to me than the health of the people that you're voting for. And as for HIPAA and rights to privacy, that all goes out the window when you're the president.
Yeah. It makes
everything
the vice presidential choice
public.
Very important, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. But yeah. I think the smart thing to do in Sanders' case would be to, you know this issue is out there. You know people are questioning it. Get in front of it. Instead of
I agree with Rosemary though. He was absolutely duplicitous. He just said he had chest pains and they put in some stents, which is a very common treatment for people with chest pains. And people who even have heart attacks have long, healthy lives after that. Sometimes it's the wake up call they need to modify their behavior.
There's plenty of ways to spin it forward.
You know, and it is remarkable and heroic that people go on and live strong lives and run marathons after heart attacks. And it's a good discussion to have, but he kind of hit it. And that seems inconsistent with this guy that seemed to portray himself as just telling it like it is.
But it does raise a question, you know, should, you know, we don't have a job description, for example, for a president. Should that be a technical requirement to pass, you know, exams to be a U.S. president?
Tax returns and medical records.
Yeah.
Yeah, I no, think that's completely, completely. Yeah, and you could spell out what, I mean, we can't, but doctors could say, here's what I need to see to tell somebody if somebody's in good shape. But the fact of the matter in the article that the New York Times, was it
Washington
New York Times?
Post.
Washington Post. Yeah. Washington Post ran today was good. The fact of the matter is the life expectancy for a male in the United States right now is right around the age of all these guys. We should be considering this.
But 80 years old, right?
Sure, but if you get to be 78 and you're robust, your chances are.
Well, I just got a letter from a statistician who said, somebody who knows my health records, who says I'm 4 years younger than I actually am. I was delighted to see that. Aren't you all?
Yes.
Right.
Congratulations.
I'll never leave.
So 74.
Yeah. So, but the you're right.
But well, I was just applying that to Bernie Sanders. Sure, sure. Four years. I mean, you know, you get a term out of it.
Well, you also see them on TV over and over, and if you watch him speak next to Biden, I'm sorry, Biden seems a lot older because of how he presents himself.
Absolutely.
Bernie seems vigorous. I don't want to defend Bernie on this, but he seems younger than Biden on this.
But we don't know what that means.
Yes.
We don't know what that means. I agree with you. It's absolutely true. I think Biden looks frail. Is he really, or is it just because he has thinner hair and doesn't gesticulate the way. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and I should know.
And I think that's my sort of trouble is, even if we do know, you know, is that the absolute indicator of, you know, someone's longevity, someone's performance,
exactly,
someone's qualifications?
Not absolute, but it's a whole lot better than a letter from a crazy doctor.
Agree.
All right, we are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for their. You got a letter?
Couple.
All right, real quick. Go ahead, Alan. You got about a minute and a half.
Joanne says, good morning. Here's a question. What happens if Bernie's chosen as the Democratic candidate and then has a health crisis before the election? How would the Democratic committee choose the next candidate? I think that's what they would do. They would go into a room and they choose the next candidate. Yeah. That's what would happen.
Oh, that'd really be awful for Trump, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm.
Superdelegates.
Lale says, Elizabeth Strong, right. Elizabeth Warren has all the ethical consistency of Bernie and then some. She has a stronger track record of enacting legislation than Bernie.
Yes.
And has shown that she can be flexible to get the job done. Strong and wrong on right and weak is a false dichotomy. You can be flexible and strong. Indeed, a storm, the most flexible tree survives. What we need now is not a storm. Talk about Elizabeth Moore. She exists. She persists. So you have. And then finally, Catherine says, Sanders' political accomplishments. Hi again, panel. I don't know where the idea that Sanders has accomplished nothing comes from. He was the mayor of Burlington for 8 years. He co-founded the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He's been called the Amendment King, Rolling Stone 2005, for his work to work on both sides of the aisle to improve legislation. He co-sponsored legislation to establish national cancer registries and to aid in cancer research. He's worked with McCain to reform the VA. He's no slouch, Catherine in Albany.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. And I'm sorry, I don't have a response. I apologize. We'll just have to come back tomorrow and do it again. We'll be back after this.